So I'm David Johnson. I'm with Microsoft IT. We're in the business of running Microsoft. We're not in the business of sales, marketing, or engineering. We're in the business, like many of you, of running our own company. So we've got to make sure that whether you're in the Windows engineering division, or you're in sales, or marketing, or finance, HR, we have to support all the businesses at Microsoft. And we have an interesting challenge in that, how do we do so while we, of course, are our I guess, let's call it first and best customer. We are obviously trying to push the envelope on our own products. We continue to try to do that. Part of that has been, I guess, the governance story of how do we govern products as with the scale and challenge of like what SharePoint provides or now 365 groups. Our employees, obviously, we encourage broad adoption, and I'll talk about that a little bit, but that's kind of what we deal with. The organization I'm in IT is actually accountable for the collaboration services within Microsoft. Like in Microsoft IT, we've consolidated Exchange and Skype and for Business, I should say, and Yammer and SharePoint all into one organization that kind of manages all the collaboration workloads. My role specifically has been accountable for SharePoint engineering. Historically, I own SharePoint engineering. Now I'm kind of a program manager architect for how do we help our businesses get solutions on SharePoint and then in 365, and that includes groups. So when we think about the challenge of governance, and I don't need to talk too much to this slide because I'm sure you all have your own challenges and some of them are probably fairly similar, but obviously first off, our employees have lots more options than ever before. How do we make sure that our employees are using the right thing at the right time and we're not leaking assets effectively? We're protecting the company. How do we make sure we're dealing with data growth? Obviously, that's a big part of a challenge. We've grown from, you know, let's just take my sites, for example. We had 8 terabytes of content on-prem before we started moving to the cloud of my sites. Cloud my OneDrive for Business is now roughly 3/4 of a petabyte of content in OneDrive for Business internally. So we're well over a petabyte of content now that we're managing in Office 365 between OneDrive for Business and SharePoint Online. So massive growth, massive amount of content to have to think about and govern and plan. The other thing is, of course, the technology landscape is continuing to evolve at a rapid pace, and obviously that poses IT challenges just on it itself. So how do we think about governance and what do we do? I break this down into kind of these 4 major buckets of governance and what we think about. And obviously governance means different things to different people. This is what it means to us, and certainly within Microsoft IT. We think about the solution governance, that when we went from prem to cloud, we had, and as we managed cloud, how do you deal with the customizations built on top of the products? People would build on-prem full trust solutions, in cloud now fortunately provider hosted apps. How do we have a model to get, approve and submit those apps? We've always had a process for submission and ingestion and now certification and review. We have that process in place for cloud now. The application goes into our application marketplace for internal marketplace, I should say, for either SharePoint or SharePoint Online. So we have the application scenario. So the discovery side is a different problem. That there's 2 types of kind of discovery problems when you're dealing with governance. One is what we think about the unmanaged content set, the breadth of all the team sites and all the groups, the kind of the team collateral where by things like Delve and SharePoint Home help with a recall scenario. I don't need to deal with the search problem as much when it's a team scenario because the team, the recall within the product helps me find the docs that my peers are working on. I don't worry about that governance. We worry about the governance for the discovery of bigger, more authoritative content. This is a knowledge management system, or this is a portal. How do I make sure that content is being managed in an authoritative way? We do things like enterprise best bets, everything from enterprise corporate taxonomy. We have a big corporate taxonomy with lots of terms. We've got in the managed metadata service. We've got enterprise schemas, so how do you define certain content sets? Using enterprise content types in SharePoint. So that's discovery governance. But I'm going to focus this conversation more now on the what I'll call the container governance. I used to, we've talked this story before, called it sites governance, because before it was sites and content, and we were managing SharePoint. But the world has changed now. It's not just about SharePoint governance anymore. It's really about SharePoint and groups, and groups being a bigger thing than just SharePoint. It's now the group being the container. I consider that container governance. I'm thinking about how do I manage the things, the containers that employees are working within the company to make sure that I've got the right things, I can hold people accountable, and so on. So I'm going to focus on those last two because obviously they're kind of a big bit of a meat here. And of course, security governance around that. One of the things that I want to bring up, though, is we enable self-service SharePoint and now Groups within Microsoft internally. And the reason for this, I mean, yes, you could say, well, of course, we're Microsoft, we're going to use our stuff. But really, what it comes down to is we wanted to empower employees. What we found is, and we've tried to do a bunch of different approaches. We've tried to put heavy controls in place. We've tried to kind of block people from doing stupid things. But you know, at the end of the day, if we don't empower our employees, they're going to work around us. They're going to find a way to get the job done. If I don't allow you to share with your partner company, you're just going to email that doc around. You're going to save it to some external service. I need to give you a safe place where I have all the right IT controls in place to do the job that you know you need to do. At Microsoft internally, our employees are highly empowered to go do their job. It's a very results-oriented company. We have to make sure that our employees are successful. So I bring that up just basically because empowering our employees really is absolutely critical. But that said, I'm not going to sacrifice protection. I'm going to make sure that we're still protecting our assets. I'm going to make sure that I can hold employees accountable to bad decisions. If someone does something they really shouldn't be doing, I'm going to track to that and look for that. So that comes down to the policies and what we deal with. And I'll talk about the classification one in a minute, but classification is basically we're saying, look, I want to understand how do you classify the data? And we do it at the container level. And yes, we're going to do it at the file level, and the Secure Islands work will help with that as well. But we really focus on the container level because we believe, again, in this frictionless model of employees working together. And if you're creating a team site historically or now a group going forward, we want to know what the classification is so that way we can at least know how to treat it, how to work for it appropriately. Is it secret content? Is it more open content? That means how should employees work with it? How should IT work with it? What should be secured? What policies should be applied? We also do things like lifecycle management. How do I have, how do I contain growth? And the thing about lifecycle management for us is it was really about not only holding your employees accountable, is this thing really still valuable? But it's also the notion of keeping your environment clean, so both improving discovery, also improving ability to get to cloud and just manage the thing. You don't want too much stuff you don't need to have. And one of the nice things about especially lifecycle governance was it was part of our model to get to cloud. One of the things we did was we turned on self-service site creation on Office 365. And before we started migration, we did that because we wanted to open the doors and wanted to say, net new, go to cloud. And of course, at first, we didn't allow all types of content, just lower and medium security. Now we allow everything. But again, we wanted to drive net new to cloud. And the lifecycle management allowed us to keep things clean in SharePoint more broadly to say, you know what, this site's no longer here. The on-prem version is no longer used. Let's get rid of it. So we do lifecycle management as well, along with holding our employees accountable. Obviously, I do things like auditing and all the rest of the stuff to just make sure that we can apply the policies, not to mention the limited access. We want to make sure that as much as, it's kind of a hard balance. We want to make it easy for our employees to share. That's critical, because if it's not easy for you to share, well, you're, again, going to find some other way to get your job done, or you're going to do the wrong thing. At the same time, people make mistakes. Employees overshare sometimes. How do you look for that? And those are all things that we do as well. So first, this is our classification. It is not the classification. You may see demos from Office or whatnot showing when you create a group, for example, you collect classification. That's just our taxonomy. So when we think about it internally, we have this HBI, what we consider many companies would call that top secret. Content that you really don't want out there. It's financially devastating potentially. There's business critical content that really just can't leak. It might be privacy implications, it might be product release details that you really don't want out there, pre-earnings information, for example. That kind of thing would be considered HBI for us, the top secret. The medium for us is more the regular content that's secret within the company. You want it contained within the individual group, but it's not that top tier. It's the bulk of the content within the company. Versus LBI is if anyone in the company can see it, okay, that's not a big deal. But it's still not public versus, of course, public. So this is just our classification scheme. And one of the things we've done is we've enabled our employees to, when we create a site or now a group, to classify that. And when we classify it, it does those two things. One, it tells us, it gives us the signals as to what kind of policies should we apply to that thing. Plus, it gives the employees visibility and user awareness of what should go there and how should I handle it. The fact that I know that this site or the group has top secret content in it means I'm more likely to follow corporate policies around how to handle HBI content, for example. So that's how we do that. But this all starts with the creation process. I noted earlier, we encourage our employees to go create new containers, new team sites, new project spaces, new groups now, new portals. So we've encouraged this, and we support this. We've helped big businesses build portals internally. So we help enable this, but for the vast majority of businesses, it's a self-service offering. And we have a self-service approach where our employees can go ahead and provision a net new site or now a new group. But second option for us is now becoming the default. Legacy, we created a team site, or you might have created a portal, publishing portal, or a project site, or a developer site. People created a developer site so they could build the experience and then sideload apps into it and do it for real. We had different policies for developer sites, for example. But you create the site and go from that there. Groups, of course, now is the kind of becoming the default as much as possible. So that's just that. I'm not going to try a demo, but I'll show a couple screens here on a couple things we do, because I noticed Wi-Fi is a little iffy. So basically, we ask our employees, what are you trying to accomplish? We give them the options. It's everything from the regional options. Hey, I want SharePoint on-prem for whatever reason. I want to have a project experience. I want to do this. We try to drive them into groups as much as possible, and we're going to shift things around, and we're going to put a better experience on top of this. But we continue to evolve what our options are and how it works. The product, though, has this one of the options that's actually in product is this create group. So we have that. And, of course, in the SharePoint homepage, you have a create group experience. Again, I'd show that, but I'm not going to demo right now. But let me show you the screens themselves. The left screen is our legacy our legacy SharePoint provisioning experience. So someone could go ahead, and when you created a new site, we would override the form that SharePoint does to say, here's what I want to do, and here's what I want to collect. SharePoint has in tenant admin the ability to say, where do I want that to go? There's a pattern in patterns and practices that explains how to go do that, along with a forms kit to here, give me my form. And you can build this experience yourself. So you can go ahead, and what we do is we collect the classification, and we then store that somewhere and manage it. Now, that's for legacy team sites. Groups changes the game. Groups actually makes it so I don't need to be custom anymore. I now have a groups experience whereby I collect the basic data that I need and the classification based on my corporate schema. Again, for us, it's our HBI, MBI, LBI. For you, it could be whatever your corporate schema is. You define it in your directory, and it will collect and create the group appropriately, which is a kind of a big step forward for us, because we've been collecting classification one way or another internally for about, 8 years or so, 8 or 9 years. So we've been doing this for many years, trying to deal with this. Now the product is doing it directly. We're kind of excited about that, but we'll get classification in box. So you can, if you still are using legacy SharePoint team sites for 365, you can go use the patterns and practices and find the solution for how to provision a site, how to collect the data. Or if you're doing groups, you'll get the out-of-the-box experience, and you can just configure the group experience. But this is, again, how we're creating and allowing our employees create the sites and groups. Let me talk about some of the policies I'll enforce in dealing with. And this is maybe a little bit of an eye chart, but I'll go through this, but point being, there is a set of things we've been doing with SharePoint, that's the leftmost column, of what have we been doing with SharePoint historically, and a lot of it's custom. So we had that custom form I noted earlier. We'd collect classification. We would stamp the SharePoint site to say, hey, this site is HBI, again, for that user awareness, that if this site has a classification, you know how to handle it appropriately. We do things like lifecycle management and naming rules and usage guidelines and ownership policies. So we do all these things highly custom on the SharePoint side. And by the way, a lot of these patterns, again, in the office patterns practices, there's not both a provisioning solution as well as a governance solution in patterns and practices. The governance solution is effectively just a bunch of Azure roles, web roles, which go ahead and run jobs against 365 with tenancy to do things like scanning for things. Like one of the big policies that we've been running on SharePoint was one that basically said, hey, I've got a site classified as HBI, I'm going to make sure that I turn off members can share. We do that, by the way, and that's somewhat controversial, because we want to make sure that the owner, if a content really is that sensitive, that secret, the owner probably should be making decisions about who it's shared with. Members can share is a great SharePoint capability for the vast majority of scenarios, and of which point anyone who is a member of a site can share it with whoever they want, which is the normal default. That's who you want to see happen. Because here's the thing, if you don't allow your members can share, that person who gets access to the content will probably, again, mail it around or do something else. So turning off members can share is how we've been dealing with a problem, but not necessarily the right way. And I think groups is going to change that dynamic. So we've been doing all these custom policies. Groups, on the other hand, changes this game in that we have classification built into groups. We've got display built into groups. We've got the usage guidelines built into groups. So we have a lot of these basic things. We had a custom lifecycle management, which basically said, hey, you know what? Your site's about to expire. We're going to flag the site. If you take no action and you don't click on that link and do anything about it, we're going to expire the site of the schedule. And by expire, on the SharePoint side, we would lock the site if you take no action. After locking the site, we'd delete the site and go from there. In the groups world, groups lifecycle management is coming. In fact, that's actually one of the nice things about this. I didn't have to build groups lifecycle management. I have SharePoint lifecycle management. But groups, we decided to turn that on knowing full well that within the time frame we would normally be hitting that lifecycle threshold, groups will be taking it over and dealing with that. So groups lifecycle management is coming. I know the product team has talked about that earlier today. Membership review being another big one that, especially for us, if you have a highly sensitive site again, who should it be shared with? Like, one of the things we've seen, employees make mistakes. We all know it. I mean, we want to look for it, right? So if you have classified your container as a highly sensitive thing, you probably shouldn't be sharing it with the entire company. You probably shouldn't have everyone except external guests. You probably shouldn't have a security group with all FTEs, full-time employees on it, for example. So we scan for things like that on the SharePoint side. And on the group side, we want to make sure that at least the membership review is going on to say, hey, if you've got a top secret site or you're sharing, or you have external people in that site or a group, you should at least be checking to say, are we still the right people? Because again, the challenge is we want to empower employees, but we also want to help protect them. And those things like this are basically that, how do we help protect you? And again, we try to be as inobtrusive as possible to make sure that we're enabling you, basically warning you, you know what, one of two things is wrong. You misclassified or you've done the wrong thing. You pick, but you need to choose soon because otherwise we're going to lock this thing. So we're aggressive about locking, but we're put the employee in the power position to make the choice as to which thing was wrong. Because as IT, we can't necessarily make the decision as to what should be secret. Now, yes, we do use DLP and we do scan for naming, for patterns, for example. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure that the containers, again, are classified into one policies based on that. So anyhow, that's what we've been doing. Now, groups though is not perfect. There are still some challenges with groups that, you know, some of the things that are still not going to be there, like some of the policy enforcement stuff, like the fact in IT, we have a two-owner policy rule. Now, is that the right thing to do, to have a two-owner policy? Maybe, maybe not. We really want active ownership. How we've done that historically has been to say, always contain two owners, one of which must be a full-time employee. If that person leaves, then someone else must be reassigned as an owner. We do that, again, to hold accountable. We're continuing to experiment on how do we hold people accountable without that kind of policy, but it's how we've been doing it. But as we go to groups, we'll still have to have some sort of policy framework in place. Now, the nice thing is groups is providing the APIs. It's all via Graph. It's all in the Active Directory. Just like we've done this on SharePoint Online, using the SharePoint APIs, we'll use the Azure and the Graph APIs to get more information and be able to do the scanning and, again, compliance on groups. So these are all things we can still do, but we will still be custom on groups. So I think the big takeaway I really want to leave you here is groups makes it better for us. We've been in a situation thus far with SharePoint where we've had to be fairly custom. Groups, we will still be somewhat custom, but nowhere near as custom. And our goal being is to everything we do will either be shipped in a product or will be something, again, that's in patterns and practices and you guys can use too. So that's kind of what we do and how we do it. Any questions before I move on to talk about resources and help? Joe's gonna help me with questions here.
At Microsoft, do you guys use any type of naming conventions for the group types, or they can name the group whatever they want?
So now that's a great question. And you know, historically, on the SharePoint side, we have not had naming rules in place. We, of course, bad words lists and stuff like that, but basically there's not like hardcore rules. Groups will have a few more rules, especially since the group is an AD object. We'll look for things like, in our case, you can't have two-letter group name, or a group name can't have a hyphen as a second character. And that's just because we have business rules internally that deal with the AD like that and certain things. But of course, we'll, again, have that in bad word list and those basic things, but that's about it. We don't actually say the group name must be prefixed with group, for example, or anything like that.
Or like project or team or anything like
that. No, we don't. We don't require that today. I mean, what we find is our employees, You know, let's say I create a group. I mean, our group name, like, we're DISCO, Discovering Collaboration Services, a DISCO. So there's lots of DISCOs in the Active Directory. And, you know, if another project team came around and said they're doing Project DISCO, they wouldn't be able to get that group name because someone else already has it. But so be it, right? I mean, that's the way groups and SharePoint has worked, that if someone really wants it, they can contact the owner of a group and request to give it up, basically.
Thanks for the question.
And by the way, yes, we are giving away a couple prizes. I don't have that very many, so really it's only going to be for a few questions, but still I want to encourage questions and as we continue through this.
Hi, thank you. From an IT perspective, don't you see an overlap between groups and team sites?
And my sites?
Team sites.
Oh, team sites. Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think that for us is a big thing. That, in fact, this is actually one of the things that I think about, that team sites aren't going away. Let's be clear. Team sites is on SharePoint Online is still perfectly valuable, and we will continue to support, even internally, the notion of having team sites. That said, we're going to encourage group provisioning because a group has a team site underneath it. When you create a new group, you get a new SharePoint site, a modern SharePoint site. And so we're going to encourage that. Now, it's not always that there are certain scenarios where a legacy team site, legacy SharePoint experience is still the way to go right now. But that said, we're going to drive as much as possible to a group scenario. But so, from an overlap perspective, yeah, the two kind of are like each other.
So internally at Microsoft, you guys are having a preference of group creation versus
yes.
team sites.
Yes.
All right. Good to know. Thank you.
Certainly for new. But think of it for a minute. I'm trying to drive a project to get the work done. When you're collaborating with others in your project team, you want planner, you want the conversations, you want, like, I'm not going to talk about the value of groups, but it's the nice thing from an IT perspective is it's one construct that brings it all together. Right, so I no longer have to deal with an Active Directory group, an Exchange DL, and a SharePoint site. I have one thing which I'm managing and governing for all those things. And that to us is really an exciting change about why groups is going to change the dynamic for us. And so yes, if you're creating a new project team, go create it as a group because we can manage it centrally. And you're more likely to be protected because you know who your project team is. Those are people in that group. That's who you're sharing with. If you're a private group, you're protected.
I have a question on the current status of groups where it's a construct with, you know, planner and notebook and then SharePoint site. Mm-hmm. So right now I think it is loosely coupled. So I can go to planner and remove people, add people. So governance-wise, it becomes tough to manage it as a container. Is there any roadmap for making it tightly coupled?
Oh, so keep in mind, any of those workloads, whether I'm managing those membership in planner or OWA, or doing something in SharePoint, it's all managing the Active Directory object. So at the end of the day, it's one thing again. If I'm adding or removing membership, it's going to impact all the different workloads. So it is tightly coupled in the Active Directory itself. And that's actually the nice thing about groups governance is that I'm governing that one thing in the AD, and everything else is going to consume from that.
Hey, David. As it relates to upcoming changes with Yammer to integrate that with groups as well, what are you guys doing to prepare for that and how the creation of Yammer groups will drive additional O365 groups?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question because honestly, we haven't got there yet. That for us is still the next thing we're going to have to go figure out because Yammer today obviously has had a rich ecosystem internally at Microsoft of people collaborating in Yammer. We've encouraged that, right? But obviously, as a team collaboration, you're going to create a new group and you're going to get a choice of, hey, is this a Yammer group or an Exchange group? And at that point, you know, I'll use one or the other. But we don't yet know today how we're going to govern Yammer separately from groups. But a Yammer group is effectively just a group again. So as I'm governing group, I automatically govern the Yammer part of it.
Since you're recommending moving away from team sites, one of the big reasons to use just SharePoint sites has been the internal SharePoint security groups. If we're going to be using this and you're creating an object every time, how does that work out? Because the internal security groups are still used a lot for high risk areas.
Yeah, and I would say the Active Directory group, the nice thing about it is I'm managing, because the Active Directory, the group, a 365 group is a security group, is one of its attributes, right? So I can use that group as a security container. So let's say team site A wants to share with X group. That's the security container to share with. So I now have that team container now a lot more defined effectively to working within. So I think the interesting question for us will be the kind of a nesting conversation when we eventually get there, and it's not a problem now because groups doesn't support nesting. But But when you do this, do you do a group at the divisional level? Do you do a group at the team level? Today, we let a group get created wherever it needs to be, just like we would let a SharePoint site get created. We would allow a divisional SharePoint site being created or a regular team site, whatever you need, we would let you co-create.
Hello.
Management side, you know, when we create so many groups, the information gets siloed. So how do you harness knowledge from your groups?
So, okay, a question of knowledge management and groups. So that how do we capture knowledge in groups? And I think the thing today is that a group for us is the team construct, the sharing within the project, sharing within the team. One of the things we've done historically, there's been that notion of a separation between what I call the unmanaged space and the managed space. That a team site, a standard team collaboration space or a group, is for the collaboration experience thus far. And so yes, I can apply metadata if I need to, but generally, employees aren't going to add metadata to content in most things they're doing in their day job, right? Metadata management is very powerful, very helpful for discovery management. I mentioned that earlier around discovery. That said, it's not going to get used an employee's day-to-day scenario where they're just simply collaborating with each other. But there is an up-leveling scenario. Like some of our sites internally that we do this, where they'll take that content and basically nominate it to say, this content in this site or group in the future is actually really important, critical content. Let's up-level it. Let's add tags to it. Let's make it an authoritative piece of content. Now, whether that moves into another library or not, it depends on the asset. Like in our Microsoft Services case, they literally have project sites where every time you're doing a project with a customer, the collateral is put there on best practices, get kind of bubbled up, and then those are things that are tagged for knowledge for reuse. Everything else is simply there and available in Delve and Office Graph and therefore SharePoint Home, but not the authoritative content. So it's kind of an up-leveling of content. And in the managed space, that's where the discovery governance kicks in, where we have things like the enterprise content types and taxonomy. Yep, and then I think we have one more question there, and then we can.
Yes, one of the answers you gave earlier in one of the questions was that team sites are going away, and that actually caught me by surprise.
So be careful. I shouldn't have, if I said going away, it's not true. Team sites is not going away.
Okay.
Team sites for us internally, it's existing, and we're trying to move people to groups. We're not deprecating team sites. In fact, and keep in mind, every group has a modern team site as part of it. But the kind of a legacy team site by the legacy UI and the provisioning process that was, we're trying to move away from, at least internally. We're saying, you know what, I don't want you to provision a legacy team site. If you're going to create something new for your team collaboration, go create it as a group. But team sites aren't going away. And a product team has not said team sites are going away.
So do you plan to improve on groups? For example, a group only comes with a single document library. How would you, if you have a team site right now that has multiple document libraries, lists, calendars, how would you proceed in the group environment?
That's a great question. And I think the separation of when do I create multiple groups is something we will have to figure out too. Like, it really is the security boundary of that project. So I would almost say, like, divide it up on the logical space to say this is the actual working team. They've got a team calendar, they've got the team libraries, and maybe nesting libraries, maybe. Totally, go ahead, build all the nesting in the document libraries. But as far as how many groups you create and whether you break that apart, I think it's still kind of an open thing as we move more and more to groups. Because, and as noted, some sites will say they'll do a lot of nesting. They'll build a whole rich SharePoint hierarchy, and here's a division and all the subsites under that. How that moves to groups, it may be that each site becomes a group themselves, as opposed to, having a big nesting thing. But it's still something we're working through. But yeah, I know we're just about out of time, so let me just make sure I cover the resources. So just to be clear, there are a lot more resources to help with this. There's a couple more sessions around how to manage 365 groups. There's also a session around the provisioning and patterns and practices and how to use those. There's a bunch of white papers available too, like more information about how we did governance within Microsoft. We've got a white paper on that, we've got a webinar on that. I also have a white paper on migration and how we migrated to the cloud, how we migrated Portal to the cloud. How we basically did that start fresh I talked about earlier to empower and encourage our employees to use the cloud as opposed to on-prem. That's all in that white paper. I got a webinar around that too. So that's all there. In addition, because I'm from Microsoft IT, We encourage people to use the IT Showcase app to find more information about how Microsoft runs ourselves. We've got lots of other collateral available there. But please make sure you take the, you get, okay. Please make sure to schedule, do eval. Sorry, didn't see those two slides before. So do we eval and love to hear your feedback, and thank you for attending. Yes, we allow group self-service group creation. Yes.
Anybody can go there and create a group.
Yes. Because we have a lifecycle management we're building, because we're doing all the other things in place, we're encouraging our employees to build groups, just like SharePoint sites. Because again, if I get in your way to get what you're not going to need to do, right? So. So we haven't yet for groups. We're about to turn that on because the product is going to we're going to use the in-product capability for lifecycle management for groups. SharePoint, we had our own custom solution that did that. Yeah, SharePoint was custom, but it won't have to be much longer. Okay, you're welcome. Groups. So we moved from on-prem team sites in many cases to cloud groups. Yes, not cloud groups. Cloud team sites. We did not move to groups. The migration story between team sites and groups, I don't think there necessarily has to be one. Basically, because a team site, if you really want to up-level and turn your team site, go create a new group for your new project. You use the existing ones as they are, because it's a new collaboration model of when you use groups. Teams, it's just as much of a, almost like a business process change as it is a technology one. So I wouldn't say it's a forced technology push. Yeah, and then what I would do is that when I noted earlier on the Start Fresh thing about empowering your employees to co-create for net new projects and new teams, go create them in the cloud with groups especially, and then let them work there. Well, so as far as leaving where it is, what I would say is, in some cases, like what we did was we literally waited a year. We let as much die on the vine as possible, effectively, and then migrated what had to be migrated that was left. So we didn't migrate everything. Literally 50% of our on-prem footprint went away before we started migration. Now, I'm not saying that'll happen to you, but I'm saying there's a process of doing cleanup. Like, I would never move my house without cleaning out my garage first. Same basic idea moving to cloud, right? Try to drive net new to cloud first, and then over time let the on-prem either deprecate and decide what you really need to take, and then move that. So yes, we did move team sites on-prem. We use tools like Metavis, for example, or Metalogix now to go do that. Well, our lifecycle management, literally we had an expiration date on every site, and we wove a group, and when that expiration date's nearly going to hit, basically we send a notification to the owner of the site, and if you take no action, we will lock that site. So it's not, we could have done it your approach you just said, which is look at the logs and say who's using what. But what we wanted to do is, it's not just necessarily based on usage, that's a core attribute, absolutely. But what if you have something that's content that's managed, but very rarely has to be changed? So we basically made the decision that, you know what, we're going to put it to the owner to make the decision as to, is this still valid and important? Now, of course, it's in addition to the standard legal retention holds and all that retention policies in place, right? So that's all still true. I think you can push through. Well, so as far as SharePoint has already said, they're going to have some process to allow an existing team site to work with groups, but SharePoint hasn't announced how they're going to do that yet. So today, what I basically say is do the net new as groups and leave team sites alone. Like, don't necessarily do too much with that. Over time, there might be a different story. But honestly, I see no real reason to force that because it is a change on the business process side. Let the business make the decision as to when they're going to move and adopt. Okay?
Do you manage nested permissions across
groups? So you can still, a group is still a SharePoint site underneath, right? So I can, the group has the permissions for a group, and that's basically it is a security group for everything in it. And when you look at the SharePoint permissions for a group, it shows you the group name on the libraries. Now, I can still do breakaways. I can still do subsites and all the rest of this stuff on a SharePoint site. It's a normal SharePoint site, right? So I can say, hey, you know what? I'm going to add other people to this subsite or this library, or to this individual person who has access to this. So you can still do that. But here's the thing to think about, that in the groups construct, You want to make it simple, because the whole point of this is, and I think this is part of a challenge of security that historically has been, by doing nesting and all the rest of it, employees got really confused. When am I inheriting? When am I not inheriting? Right? And the whole point of a group paradigm is, let's make it really easy for employees to just do the right thing, right? And so, yes, but you don't have to. If you still want to use the nesting model and go ahead and have all the subsites and all that stuff and nested different permissions, you can. Group supports that. We don't stop you. But it's simply a matter of, from an encouragement perspective, I would say, like we typically say, if you're building a top secret site, build that as a completely independent group, for example, than building your low security site. Like, don't nest, just independent. And I know that makes more groups, more sites, but from an employee perspective, it's more manageable, because now I know my boundary. I know who I'm sharing with, right?
There's the opposite philosophy of earlier IA, where we used to consolidate people into sites which are
The nesting, I mean, as engineers, we love nesting. We love tree structures, right? And I mean, I totally get it. I see that. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily make the most business sense to the employee. And I think that's a challenge of, we're trying to move the experience to put the employee first, which means we've got to change the model.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Yeah, the interesting discussion with Mark Cashman.
Yes.
He recommended to reach out to you, because we had just in transition from 2013 on-prem to not sure what, maybe really Office 365 SharePoint, or maybe we run own Azure SharePoint 2016.
Well, yeah, I mean, so as far as migration, it all depends on what you're trying to migrate or what you have, as far as those decisions, I would say.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one of the things you can see is we've got a white paper that I put up the link for earlier, but you can go through that white paper and find more information around how we migrated. But I'm also happy to answer any additional questions. Like, you can reach out to me, david.johnson@microsoft.com,
okay.
And you can, and I can at least run you through our process to have a conversation if that's what you want to do.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Happy to talk to you guys.
See you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome.